Josh Hawley is a
Welcome to RootsPod, an audio production of RootsBlog and member of the RootsCast Broadcast Network. Again, just Aaron and Peter this time because John is still on the lam. So let's just address the elephant in the room. That game was awful. And I'm referring, of course, to Las Vegas Lights 2, Oakland Roots 0. That was bad.
It was real bad.
That was exceedingly bad. One of the only things that we have done consistently correct this year as a squad is beat MLS two sides at home. And that did not happen Saturday.
Well, it wasn't great that Jennings and Trejo were there, which we had hoped would not be the case. And they turned out to actually make a pretty significant difference in the game.
Huge, huge difference. I mean, if there's one thing you don't want to have happen when your back line is consistently losing people, it's to have two really competent attackers, which is what happened.
Yeah, the Roots did not look their best before Paul Blanchett obliterated that guy.
No, they didn't. But it was evenly played, though. I think we saw a match between two teams that, you know, Vegas is more defensively minded, Oakland is more offensively minded. But if there were a video game rating system, they'd be equally rated. Basically, I think they're even in that regard, even overall, and they kind of looked like it. Oakland had the better chances in the first half, but that's entirely due to the fact that Vegas has a crippling inability to stay onside. And as soon as they managed to stay onside, disaster happened.
It's staggering to me that you would go, that you'd take that risk, that you would ever, you know, obviously, like, Blanchett doesn't leave his goal if he doesn't think that he's going to get to the ball first, right? I mean, he's not going looking for a red card. But, man, Jennings is good, but he's not Erling Haaland. Like, yeah. Make him take the shot from the hard angle.
You know, soccer requires a degree of humility that I think a lot of other sports don't. You know, you can't always be trying to make the great play in soccer. Sometimes the right play is just a simple pass backwards. And in this instance, I think rather than going, it's easy to say this in hindsight, obviously, but rather than going for glory, just let him take the shot. I mean, I think you have to trust that this offense is going to score at least one goal if there are 11 men on the pitch for all 90 minutes. But, you know, one of the things
it
that
averages nearly two.
Right. Yeah. It wasn't going to be the end of the game if Vegas went into the locker room up a goal. And Blanchett is one of the better shot stoppers in the league. Like, this is the thing he's good at, just do that thing. You know, one of the things we'd wondered on previous pods and in some of John's blog posts is Blanchett was so good last year for a team that made the playoffs. Why do you go out and get another keeper on loan when you already have him on the roster? And one of the things we had speculated is that, well, if you want a guy who distributes the ball well, this is not your guy. Like, he's very good. He's a very good shot stopper, but he's not a good distributor. And I think actually in the last few weeks, we have learned that one of the other sort of shortcomings in his game is the one-on-one game. We sort of overlooked it against Sacramento, but in that second goal, he made an absolute meal out of the breakaway. Now, he was put in a terrible position, so you could overlook it at the time. But in this one, I am not entirely sure what he was looking at. Because as soon as you saw him start running out, I mean, I was cringing in the stands. Like, this is not going to end well. And it very much didn't. And I think it was even more noticeable. There was a Vegas breakaway at the very end of the game where Taylor Bailey did exactly what you would want a goalkeeper to do in a one-on-one situation. He came out and he made himself big and he stopped the third goal. Bailey's not as good a shot stopper as Paul is. Like, I'm not sure how many keepers in the USL are, but if he's got those other things going on, we'll probably be okay for the one match that Paul is out.
Yeah. To your point about can the Roots score at least one goal? I just went back and looked at this. if you go back to May 18th, the Roots have been held to one goal or less four times. Two of those were when they got a stupid red card, and two of those were by the best defenses in the Western Conference and the first and third defense overall. Trust that your team is going to score two goals.
Yeah.
The number one thing you can do to keep this game close is keep 11 men on the field.
Yeah.
Losing Janssen, you know, like, he was the player that had to get sacrificed, and I think that probably makes sense. You'd rather have Formella and Carlson up top trying to hit them on the breakaway. But, like, God, the team grinds to a halt without Janssen up there.
So without someone. Yeah. I actually liked the move originally to pull Janssen because at that point, your best hope for a point is still a clean sheet, still nil-nil. And so have two defensive guys in the midfield. But old issues still came back to haunt us in the second half there. The first goal was, to me, essentially a replay of the first goal that Los Dos scored when they were up a man down in Carson, which is that you get a guy on the wing in acres of space because we're playing a very narrow midfield, and the back line loses a guy at the back post, which is just our favorite thing to do. And then later in the game, they lost another guy at the back post.
I don't know what 538 looked like on the expected goals from the Lights game, and it's going to be totally crazy because the second half of that game is not going to tell the story of the first half.
Yeah.
But FontMob had one big chance in the game and had it going to the Oakland Roots. So that's frustrating.
That is incredibly frustrating, and that makes it's going to be one of those from the first half, too. In fact, 538 has it as 0.6 to 0.6, which is possibly more frustrating. The story of this season, if it's not inconsistency, it hasn't been written yet. And there are two really competing narratives that are consistent with the evidence. You have the bad narrative, which says you've won 6 out of 23 games, and who have you beaten? And the answer is not many teams, right? Three of the wins are at home to MLS 2 sides, Loudoun, Atlanta United, and LA Galaxy 2. There's the Orange County win, which was spectacular, maybe the highlight of the season. There's away against Monterey Bay, which is an away win. That's nice, but that's not a typical USL away trip, and it's against an expansion side. And then we have this 4-0 win against El Paso, which looks worse by the day. El Paso put together a very lackluster performance against San Antonio at the weekend. So who have you beaten? And the answer is not very many people. On the other hand, you could also say that, you know, you start the season with a coach who's still getting his feet wet, with a roster that's still under construction, and with an incredibly difficult schedule to open the season, right? You had a away at Rio Grande Valley. That's not easy, just logistically. Away at Memphis 901 FC. Memphis looks like one of the better teams in the East. You come back, you get San Diego and Tampa Bay, two of the best teams in the USL. And if you take out the first six matches, this team is 6-7-4, and you can tell a plausible story about all four losses. All right, one of them is the Colorado Springs game that Oakland dominated and just couldn't finish. One of them is the game in which Rito got injured. And then the other two are games in which they went down a man. And, you know, from that perspective, this season is okay. You know, it could still use a few more victories, but it's okay. They're 6-7-4 over the last 17 matches. That's close to the pace they need to get into the playoffs. And I don't know, if you'd asked me after the El Paso game, I would have said it's the good narrative. You asked me right now, it's the bad narrative. I think they a result against Phoenix is, I think it is actually critical.
Yeah. I think it's critical for the team to believe in the team.
Yeah.
You know, your point about El Paso, you know, they lost 1-0 to San Antonio, held San Antonio to 5 shots on target. I mean, and what looked like it was falling apart about El Paso was their defense. And, you know, then they hosted San Antonio and they got the best possible kind of loss in a sense. I mean, I don't know. I'm grasping at straws here.
I would like to believe, but their supporters did not seem enthused on Twitter after the game. And Twitter is not necessarily an accurate representation of a whole fan base or anything, but it doesn't sound like they are excited about the direction of the team right now.
If I was an El Paso fan, I think that I would think they weren't going to make the playoffs. That they were not as
that's brutal.
You know, as a Roots fan, I'm not ready to predict that El Paso aren't going to make the playoffs. But I think that if I were an El Paso fan looking at this, I would say that the jig is up. They're not going to get enough. They're going to get so few points that they're going to get passed. Well, it's frustrating. It's both frustrating that the Roots missed an opportunity and a relief that the rest of the teams that the Roots needed to drop points all did except Vegas.
Right. That is maybe the only really bad thing to come out of this. A loss as opposed to a draw at this point in the season is not that big a deal. One point isn't going to be enough, right? Draws are not like Pokemon. You don't need to collect them all. We need the 3 points, and 0 versus 1 is not a big deal. The only issue is that a team we're in contention for the last couple of playoff spots got the 3. But you're right. The rest of the results went about as well as we could have expected. San Diego beat RGV. Very standard stuff there. Orange County beat LA Galaxy 2. And the only real bad thing about this one is that I believe Milan Ilosky scored 2 goals.
Yes, so he did.
That is, as far as Golden Boot races are concerned, that's a bit of a bummer. But LA Galaxy doesn't get any points. And Phoenix Rising managed to draw Sacramento. Now, part of what's going on there is that Sac was playing sort of a B squad because they have an upcoming Open Cup game. But whatever, they didn't get the 3 points. They only got the 1 point. So all of these teams are still within shouting distance. But again, the Roots have basically a 2-week layoff coming up, and they're going to need some teams to stumble over the course of those 2 weeks if they want to stay in shouting distance of the playoff hunt. And they do have an opportunity to correct things very quickly to get that taste out of their mouth against a Phoenix Rising team that is overall struggling, but has actually put together a couple of semi-impressive results in the last week with a draw away against Louisville City and then a draw at home to Sacramento. Caveats, of course, with the Sacramento team sheet. To help us preview the Phoenix Rising game, I sat down with Niall from the Phoenix Rising Fan Experience podcast, and here's our conversation. You guys obviously come into this season with sky-high expectations, right? And things have not gone to plan. So what is it? What has happened? And if you were in charge, how would you go about fixing Phoenix Rising?
Huh. Well, you're absolutely right about expectations. I don't remember coming into a season ever feeling so good about what was in front of us. We did lose Solomon Asante. He was the MVP for 2 years. He was our captain. He was a phenomenal player and a talisman for the team. And with him gone, you know, there were concerns, but we were feeling like, well, we don't win because of one player, and we didn't set records because of one player, so everything's going to be okay. But that's an issue. That's an issue that we lost our best player. We brought on players that haven't performed at the level that we expected them to, especially I'm thinking of Marcus Epps. He plays on the front line on the right side, and he came from San Antonio, and he was probably our big signing of the offseason. And we haven't got a lot out of him. We're still expecting that he will bring it, and we do see good things from time to time. But he's just an example of players who've come in that have not lived up to our expectations. I think it was a last minute thing that we lost our assistant coach and he wasn't replaced. And that, of course, is Juan Guerra. I was talking to our coach, Rick Shantz, in the offseason, and he was talking about, you know, having so many players back and having so many of the coaching staff back. And then just before the season started, well, we don't have our assistant coach. And one of the issues there that gave us pause was that Rick explained that he depended on Juan Guerra, and that Juan Guerra would lead the training sessions, you know, Tuesday through Friday, and then Rick would come in on Saturday with final touches. And now that you don't have somebody to do that, and that it's all now really on Rick and the other assistant coach that had been there, Danny Stone, you're wondering if that's got something to do with it. And then beyond that, you know, the refs are always against Phoenix Rising, Aaron. You know that, right? The ball never bounces our way this season. We've just been so unlucky that they've been... Last night, for example, we had 27 shots on goal. And with so many of those shots, or not just shots, but attempts with headers on goal, you know, when they zoomed in on the players afterwards, the players were just like, how did that not go in? You know, we could just see it so many times. And we were all thinking, whoa, Phoenix are playing a phenomenal game. They're connecting. They're shooting from all sides. Their shots are coming from close to goal, from outside the box. Shots are on target. What's going on? We've just been really unlucky. And we've had a lot of games where we've just been really unlucky. You know, if you look at number of shots, we're up there with El Paso. I think El Paso is number one with the number of shots in the season, and we're number two. So we're just not converting. So something's going on in with our final third that we're just not able to find the back of the net. There was talk and rumors about the coaching staff losing the locker room. But I'm not buying that for two reasons. Number one is that we've had the players come out and talk to the press, and there's been no question of them being anything but as excited to fight for this team, as excited for the rest of the season. So I'm not buying that there's been an upset in the locker room. And also, during the preseason, I got the opportunity to speak with some players that didn't get picked up, and they talked to me about the culture of Phoenix Rising and the support, and that it's a brotherhood, it's a family. And just week by week, when I see the players, you know, hug each other and the way they hold themselves going onto the pitch, coming off the field, I don't feel like the team is in tatters. I really think that we've just been very unlucky, and maybe we weren't prepared for a lot of our early games where we lost to some of the two teams, like where we lost to Vegas, where we lost to Los Dos. So that's my explanation. So from the outside, what do you think?
Well, it is tough. I think one of the things that you've said there, if I could characterize it back to you, is that this is still a very talented team, and all things being equal, this is still a team you would expect to put together a lot of good results. And I understand, obviously I have no special insight on this, but I do understand people speculating that he might've lost the locker room, because it is often the only kind of thing that could explain the skid that Phoenix is on. Right. I mean, this team started the season 6-0-3 and just isn't picking up points now. And it's, not only is that wild for any team in the USL, it's especially shocking to see it coming from a team that has been at the top of this league for 3 or 4 years now, when from the outside, the only big changes were Solomon Asante, who has not had a very good season for Indy 11, right? I mean, that looks like that was a shrewd move right there. And the departure of an assistant coach. And I understand assistants can be very valuable, but Rick Shantz has something like a lifetime 66% winning percentage. I mean, that's incredible. And it's just sort of shocking. I think all of us kind of want to know, like, is this a blip, or is this the end of a dynasty? And I gather from what you're saying is we should think of this more as a blip, and we should all be sort of worried about when this particular sleeping giant is going to wake up.
I've got one other thing to add, Aaron, and that is our lineup. When I talked with Rick Shantz in the off season, he talked about how we were consistently putting out a lineup that brought us a lot of success, but there were moments that the particular formation that we had on the field wasn't adequate. And we lost some games where he reflected that we probably should have changed our formation. And this season, we started off with our regular formation. We had success. And then I feel like Rick Shantz took a chance with some alternative formations, and they just did not work out to the detriment of the win on the night. So we ended up losing matches. And there was a period that you never knew what the formation was going to be. And you felt like there was just that things weren't together. And I think Rick has just decided that he's going to put his faith in what he knows, and that we're going to see a consistent formation from here on until the end, the playoffs and beyond, possibly.
So jumping off of that, what can we expect to see from Phoenix on the pitch? Tactically, who are the performers to look at? I mean, what is, you know, sort of the elevator pitch rundown for this version of Phoenix Rising?
Yeah, you're going to see a 4-3-3. And on the back, the weak spot that other teams have picked out have been our left back position. So Babacar Jai plays there. He's incredible on the attack. I didn't look at his stats from this weekend's game, but he was attacking so much and being very effective in attack. He was dribbling successfully. He was beating his tackles, and he was crossing in or taking nice shots. So the problem there is that he potentially is not tracking back fast enough. Then in the midfield, you've got Aidan Quinn, Kev Lambert, and probably Cozy DiNasciano. They're probably going to be the starters. And we have a very solid midfield. Other teams have a problem breaking through our midfield. We play that flat back, the flat four at the back, and you'll see those push up. So really, when another team tries to push through, they're really facing the four players from the back and three players from the midfield. So they're trying to push through a wall of seven players. And you don't see a lot of teams that can be successful passing and tackling through that wall. So you're going to see, but what we've seen is long balls over the top trying to get in behind. And maybe that's where we're weak as well, especially if we're playing a young, fast squad, that they can beat us to those balls. And then up front, you're probably going to see Richmond Antwi as our number nine. He's bigger than Greg Hurst, who was holding that position for the majority of the season up until the last few weeks. And we've seen Greg move over to the left side, and a new signing, Lamin Jame, and he's on the right side. So they've been playing really well in recent games, and I wouldn't expect to see a change to that.
Do you think that the last couple of performances, which haven't made a difference in the table, but a draw away at Louisville City is a pretty good result. A draw against Sacramento Republic, there's nothing we can say here that's bad about draws against Sacramento Republic. That's all we seem to be able to pull off. Does it look like a team that is finding its footing, that's turning things around, or do you think that there's something particular about these two games that maybe means that we can't draw too many lessons from these performances?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're going to have one game at a time, and I'm seeing us coming out with all guns blazing on Wednesday against Oakland. And I would be surprised if, and I said this when we were playing Sacramento, I would be surprised if we don't win against Sacramento. So especially, they're preparing for their Open Cup game. They played, no disrespect, a B squad, and we didn't. Unfortunate, but I really expect to come out all guns blazing against Oakland in this midweek game, and I'm hopeful. You know, I really believe in this team, and I think they can do it.
What do you think? I assume that you would like and believe that this Phoenix Rising team can make the playoffs. What needs to change for them to move up the table such that they can qualify for the playoffs?
Just lady luck, honestly. Okay. Really, that's all it is. You know, we had so many shots last night that were inches off. We were the dominant team last night. We were playing like Phoenix of 2020, 2021. And I think that if luck just goes our way, that the rest of the season isn't going to be an issue. I really believe in our players. We should have Arturo Rodriguez, our number 10, back with us within the next few weeks. And I think that's going to make a big difference for us as well.
From the outside, it looks like Rodriguez's absence has made a big difference. Is that a fair statement?
I'd agree with that. Yeah.
So has anyone really, I mean, he's an attacking midfielder, right? Has anyone mm-hmm. stepped up and kind of taken that mantle?
Yeah, we signed on loan from Nashville, Cozy Donaciano, and he's good, but he's not playing his heart out. You know, I had Devin Kerr on last week, and Devin Kerr was saying, you've got these guys who are in on loan, who are young, who aren't making the squad in their MLS sides, and they just don't seem to be giving it 110% every time.
Yeah.
So I would expect that Donaciano will sit it out when Arturo Rodriguez comes back. And I think we'll see a difference.
All right. Well, how do you see this game going? What would be your prediction for what we see on the pitch on Wednesday?
My prediction is usually a 4-0.
Okay.
And I'm not ready to deviate from that. How about you?
I think, you know, Oakland does not tend to put two bad performances together in a row. So I'm expecting a much better performance than we saw at the weekend against Light. So I think 3-2 to Oakland.
It's going to be great. Whatever the result, it's going to be a great night. I'm really looking forward to it.
So many thanks to Niall for joining me, and you can actually hear some of my thoughts about the game over on the Fan Experience podcast that's coming out this week as well. But let me just, I'm going to put it out there. This game seems critical.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Phoenix have two, we talked about this a little bit on last week's pod. Phoenix have two wins since May 18th, and neither of them is a particularly quality win. They have a loss, draw, draw in their last five.
One win since May 18th, isn't it?
I thought it. Oh, it's since May 1st they have two.
May 1st, yeah. So since May 1st, two wins, one the home win against San Antonio, and then an away win against Hartford.
Yeah, and so the San Antonio, they have one quality win since May 1st and only one other win. And, you know, Hartford's a long way away, but Hartford are not great.
Yeah. So you heard from Niall on the Fan Experience. He's of the opinion that this is still a talented team that just isn't getting lucky. We could look at their recent game against Sacramento for an example of that. They had 27 shots and 7 on target and couldn't put anything past the keeper. That is either the worst luck in the world or we're looking at the least clinical team in the league. If both of those could continue through Wednesday, I wouldn't be upset about it. And Niall also mentioned a couple of weaknesses in this Phoenix Rising squad that Oakland seemed pretty well positioned to exploit. So he said they're pretty weak down their left side. So that's Oakland's right. So Eduardo Rito might have a field day with Babacar Nye on that side of the pitch. And then he suggested that Phoenix was susceptible to the long ball. So there might also be some opportunities in this match for Asokar and Formella to leave their mark. And I had previously said on the blog, I think there should be some rotation. To hell with rotation. Like, this has gone from we don't want to have injure guys with three games all right in a row too. We got to empty the tank because we need 3 points here.
I think that's right. I think that's exactly right, to empty the tank. And I mean, your point's well taken that August 13th is their next game after this. 3 points right now. And then, and then everyone gets a couple of days off training altogether.
That I think has to be the strategy.
There's an 11-day gap after the Detroit City game too.
Yeah.
So there is one after Phoenix, there is one game in the following month.
Not only is a win necessary, but there are also at least two relevant matches on the schedule apart from Oakland Phoenix on Wednesday. So we have RGV hosting Hartford, and I mean, you can't really expect much out of that one, but weirder things have happened in the USL. And then you have Vegas hosting San Antonio. And I think we on this pod have become huge San Antonio fans recently.
They just keep taking points away from all our least favorite people.
That's a public service, if nothing else. And they get another chance to at the weekend, actually. Oakland will be off, but San Antonio hosts LA Galaxy too. So let's go San Antonio. And you also have SAC at Charleston Battery, which is a rough, rough trip. Vegas at Atlanta United 2, which that could be a fun game, actually. That'll be in the MLS next year, but that could be a fun game. El Paso hosts Louisville City, so we'll be rooting for Louisville City there. Orange County hosts San Diego, and we got to hope that Orange County's offensive output was just a blip. And then Phoenix gets Colorado Springs Switchbacks. So Phoenix is in a brutal stretch, but there is every reason to continue to be optimistic about the playoffs, but it's all contingent on Oakland getting a good result out of this Phoenix Rising match.
So a couple observations. One is that SAC has to travel cross country to Charleston 3 days off of their US Open Cup match. So, you know, exactly why you were saying they might have played a light squad against Phoenix at the weekend. They're going to play their starters midweek and then fly everyone cross country for a game that starts, you know, 4:30 p.m. at the time of day for that, you know, the SAC players are going to be acclimatized to.
Yeah.
Also, you got a feel for El Paso. They're trying to right the ship right now and they have to host Louisville. Which is not great.
That is a real when it rains, it pours situation.
So Vegas traveling to Atlanta. Atlanta has a couple of results in the last month that would make you feel like there's something to hope for with Vegas going out there. Yeah. But, you know, not much. That's not the one to pin your hopes on. New Mexico flying to New York for the Sunday game. To New Jersey for the Sunday game. But Red Bulls are so atrocious that even with those New Mexico players jet-lagged, you have to assume they're going to win 2-0.
Yeah, although they do have to turn right back around and go to New Mexico so that they can play Sacramento midweek there. So, I mean, that's maybe there's some advanced planning there. It probably doesn't help that Red Bulls are so bad. If Red Bulls were any good, that would be different, but... That is a tough little stretch.
SAC is playing Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday. And the only one that's not a team that's better than them is a trip all the way across the country.
Oh, they play again that following Saturday, too, against RGV Toros. I mean, this is a...
They could get like 0 points or like 2 points. In that. Yeah.
I do not envy that. As much as I would rather... not have a big empty stretch in the middle of the playoff hunt like this, it's probably better than having to fly across the country several times to play back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back difficult fixtures.
Well, we've been talking about how frustrating it is to look at the table and worrying it is to look at the table and say the Roots don't have the points they need and everyone has games in hand on them. And that sucks, right? But suddenly it's late July and everyone else has to catch up to the Roots by playing two fixture weeks or by not taking any weeks off. And suddenly those teams, you know, they're saying they need to make up ground to get into the playoff hunt. And they're going to have high stress games twice a week. And it's going to get really tiring. So, you know, I wish the Roots had picked up more points. But, you know, I think the table kind of favors them now in terms of fitness.
Yeah. Well, since there is a big break after the Phoenix game, we will probably also have at least a week off here in the pod. We'll all have a chance to decompress after the Phoenix game, and then we'll be back to discuss the Detroit City trip, which I know we're all excited about. As much as we hate Sac Republic, I think we can all find some room in our hearts to hate Detroit City as well. So we'll be back for that. But until then, up the Roots.